Well,
what is this? Is this this amazing world of podcasts?
God, it's the president of Ireland.
It is me. What is it all to you?
Michael D. Higgins, it's an honour to have you on the podcast.
I absolutely delight in the sonic landscape of podcasts are fantastic.
What is in the bag?
It is an absolute pleasure. I can remember a time when I would curl up at my father's feet as we would twist the knobs into wireless, and I would tell me father, twist them knobs hard. Especially wonderful for me to be here tonight when you honour and glorify the wonder of Irish cinema.
You're welcome to stay, you know, we'd love to have you.
Away, Mishnah, away, back to the arts.
I didn't know he could do that.
The best bits. I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
You are stupid, you have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Don't call me stupid.
Be a witch.
And welcome to the best bits.
Caid mí le fáilte.
And you could say Caid mí le fáilte, you could say all sorts of things. But welcome to the Best Bits podcast, a movie podcast where we pick our favourite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific teams. I am your host, Liam O'Quillan, writer of 3 films, a Christmas special and a Star Wars. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host and writer of 1 and a bit films and 3 and a bit episodes of television, Cuivín O... How'd you pronounce your surname, Cuivín?
O'Leehan.
O'Leehan. I was actually... O'Leehan. And earlier on I said O'Leehan. I was like, it's actually O'Leehan, right?
It is, yeah.
Cuivín, do you know that the Irish goalkeeper, who is the second...
Cuivín Kelleher
plays... He played last night. He played an absolute stormer. And I listened to the commentary, I think the Liverpool commentary, and the guy. I listened to the guy pronounce Cuivín, and he went, Cuivín.
Some of them do it quite well.
This one guy went, Cuivín. Cuivín Kelleher.
Well, listen, I just saw Cillian Murphy walking the red carpet and all of the photographers going, Cillian, Cillian, this way, Cillian, Cillian.
Shut up.
Shut up, yeah. Oh, it's a terrible lot together. I hated my name growing up. I hated being called Cuivín. But Cuivín Kelleher has actually managed to make me feel a little bit of, I won't say pride, but just I don't feel as mortified by
I like Cuivín. And I was very proud to hear Cuivín Kelleher being said playing for Liverpool and winning a trophy with Liverpool.
I remember a couple of Brazilian girls really liked the name Cuivín.
It's a good name. It's got a nice sound. You should earn it. You should own it, baby.
Cuivín O'Leehan, unsure. Well, we're talking about Irish films. It was recommended to us by a listener. Michal wrote in and he wanted us to do best Irish scene.
Yeah.
We've slightly twisted that to be best Irish films, and then we'll talk about whatever scenes come up from that. And I put some parameters on it for you where I said, let's talk about 5 that we absolutely love. Let's keep it like that, because otherwise we're going to get into this whole pissing contest of why didn't you say this and why didn't you say that and why didn't you say this.
Yeah.
And there are so many lists out there, which is like the top 50 Irish films, the top 33, the top 100, whatever. I went and filled in the blind spots for myself, and where I was dreading this topic for being almost homework. It's like, oh God, these are going to be a lot of ponderous films that I've avoided for a certain reason, and now I have to sit down and watch them. I actually came away from this feeling fucking radicalized.
Good.
And feeling like Ireland produces some of the best independent films out there. And we have tackled almost all of the genres that you can tackle, and we've excelled at it. And I think the country is overflowing with talent down through the generations. And I really feel immense pride having watched these films. The cultural cringe was eradicated.
Yep.
I came away from it, like after watching The Wind That Shakes the Barley and all those Cork accents, I felt like taking up arms. I was like, do you know what? I could do with a hobby.
Look, Tiddy, there's one in four people out of work in this country, right? I have seen children and families starving. Do we expect them to head off to New York and London like before? Is that what we fought for?
We didn't fight for this, Damien.
Look, it's too late. You're not going to convince me.
You've always been a dreamer,
Damien.
I am
not a dreamer. I am a realist, Tiddy.
Up until then, I would have been avoiding it because I didn't want to hear all those cock accents on screen.
Yeah.
The shame of it.
And instead, I was like, oh my God, it's amazing. Hibernian English is gorgeous.
Yeah.
God,
you fucker. Yeah, it's a powerful film. A similar feeling to you, I was kind of dreading it because it's a bit of a minefield, especially when you're talking about something that's home turf. But I very much came away from it feeling the same. I said, holy shit, we have punched so well above our weight with regards to cinema, particularly when you actually look at how long we've been active as a nation producing cinema, as opposed to Britain, who's been actively producing cinema for 100 years now, since the silent era. We haven't had a film industry. It only really started in the 80s, 90s. There have been lots of Irish films or Irish set films or Irish stories, but films made from Ireland that are spawned out of Ireland, that industry only has kicked off in the last few decades. So we're doing great.
That's a very good point. Although, I have a hot take.
Oh, getting the Evening Echo is getting ready, right. It's getting the old headline ready.
And I'm also guilty of it because, as I said to you, I avoided some of these films for the sense that I would have cultural cringe.
Okay.
And I think that that is indicative of Irish people in general, maybe.
Go on.
In that we do not embrace our own talented people until they have gone overseas and made a name for themselves. And if they are anointed or adopted or embraced by the Brits or the Americans or whatever, and they make us proud, then they become legends.
Mm-hmm.
And we never let them forget it, that they make us so fucking proud. And I suppose because they're ambassadors for the country, we love them for that. But prior to that, you can be viewed as having notions and you're not that particularly special. And you can die of neglect as a talented individual in Ireland. And that's why I think an awful lot of our biggest stars made their bones overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was slightly disabused of that notion by watching these films. But that is a hot take that I think has some truth to it.
Oh, I agree with it, because we're Irish and we've got the tall poppy syndrome inherently. If anyone's got a bit of notions, because this is just, and I don't think it's just in relation to this, it's in a lot of things. If anyone's got a bit of notions, we love bringing them down to size. We love bringing everyone back down to our level. And it's not until someone actually breaks above its threshold, like you were saying, achieving success on an international level, which brings, what it is, it's a selfish thing. By them being incredibly successful, it elevates our sense of our own sense of national pride. You know what I mean? It all of a sudden extends to ourselves. We can all of a sudden go, isn't Cillian Murphy absolutely great? I'm so proud of Cillian Murphy. Whereas before, does that Cillian Murphy fella, who does he think he is? Disco pigs, this and disco, whatever. I'm being facetious here. But I think it's just...
Oh my God, that's a hot take, Will. You shouldn't be saying that.
I love Cillian Murphy. And I've been in his company once very briefly a million years ago at the Rowing Club in Galway Film Fla. And he was a gentleman. That's what I would say about Cillian Murphy. He was a very, very nice, softly spoken man. And I can't say but nice things about him.
Here's the other hot take. This is going to enrage now so many people. But okay. I think, why not say it? Because it might get us a bit of traction.
Ooh.
All of our best films, bar a handful, are directed by British filmmakers.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
Even Echo, Cork screenwriter. Irish filmmakers can't make good Irish film. Must leave it in the hands of the Brits to sort that shit out.
Martin McDonagh. I mean, he's as British as they come.
I mean, no disrespect, but you're a cunt.
Have you just walked off?
No, I just had to go and just contact the newspapers. Just going to get them in on the stream live.
I think that that's important to bring up because I think, as you were saying, it speaks to how much of a late starter we were as an industry, you know, making films.
Yeah.
And it is a testament to the writers of those films that big heavy hitter British directors came to Ireland and made some of our best films.
I think you're right. It's just we didn't have the infrastructure of people coming up through the ranks, knew how to make a film of a calibre and on a budget and on a scale that would travel abroad, I suppose. That's what it is. But I think the tide has well and truly turned. I think we are firmly in a place now where we are producing top-notch directors, writers and film crew and people all over the shop.
And stars. And film stars.
Loads of them. Sure isn't Hollywood littered with Irish yobs. Yobs?
There's so many now that you'd almost not even pay attention to them. It's like I was watching Saltburn and it's like, oh, there's your one from Cork as a sister in Saltburn.
Yeah, I know her, yeah.
My God, we're just popping up everywhere.
She's horrified like Michael Guiney.
So Will. Yeah, getting curtains. They're on sale.
Yeah.
I have a list of 10 films and I have tried to avoid the sort of the usual titles that would come up. And this is a very personal list. This is just my list of films that I enjoy. And I'm recommending to people, if they haven't seen them, to watch them. And that's all this is. I've not ranked them. And I've got 10, but I'm going to go with 5. And then I'll tell you what my other few were. But
I'm glad that you have done it that way, because I've done the very basic thing and picked the films that you expect to pick and threw in a couple of other ones into the mix. So these are ones like that.
I thought we agreed we weren't going to talk about Grabbers.
Let's just put one thing out there. Grabbers will not even come close to this list.
I called myself a sea monster.
Something totally alien.
We taint our blood with booze, we're poisonous to eat.
It's extraordinary.
We stay out of the rain and we drink.
I didn't even think about it when I actually know.
Okay,
think about
well, Grabbers. I'm going to I did start think off about my Grabbers. List. I'm going to start off my Grabbers. List. I'm going to start off my. No, you've said it now, you fucking bastard.
Will you stop? Don't get petty on me. Don't get petty. I am just rising you.
I'm not getting petty. That's it. I'm not getting petty. I'm going to shame you. I'm going to say that in my top 3 Irish films of all time would be 2 of yours.
Oh, Jesus
and
Christ.
I think that Song of the Sea and Wolfwalkers are unassailable classics. Maybe classics is a term that they need to cook a little bit more, but they've been around for, I don't know, must be 12 years since Song of the Sea.
10 years actually this year. Yeah, 10 years.
Dad.
This is your sister. You're her big brother. You must always look after her.
I think both films are masterpieces. Oh, I think they're absolutely gorgeous. And I think that you're one of the best writers in the country of Irish legends and myths of that calibre. They're beautiful films. I don't say it enough because I like to joke on the podcast where I'm like, I'm looking forward to seeing it and all that kind of stuff. But now we're actually doing Irish films. I feel like I have to sort of like, I have to kiss the ring and say, all jokes aside, they're fucking gorgeous films and I would include them, but we've talked about them so many times on a podcast. But if you haven't seen Will's 2 films, Song of the Sea and Wolfwalkers, are fucking perfect films and I love them so much.
This year,
I'm looking for my sister.
One small hero.
I have to find her.
You still have a chance.
Will awaken. The biggest adventure of all.
Jamie Mackerel. Whoa! Yahoo! Holy moly! Go, Cool!
Well, you have shamed me. You have.
You were saying about Grabbers, were you? It won't come anywhere close.
Listen. You have that was a wonderful comeback. That's a wonderful comeback. Thank you very much.
Look, it's not a speech. Fuck off.
I'm now feeling quite bashful and humble and a little bit bad for what I said.
But you should be, because I told you before we came on the episode, I said to you, I don't say it to you enough, but you're a brilliant writer. And it was purely because I went back and I rewatched both films.
Right.
Because I thought, I'm going to have to talk about them, so I may as well be more familiar with them. And then I just came away going like, Jesus Christ, he's actually brilliant and I don't tell him enough. You're always just like trying to.
Yeah, it just rises me. Yeah, he takes a piss out of me the whole time. But you see, this is the tall poppy thing. This is what we do to each other. Is we always, as a nation, we're just always just kind of taking the piss out
I'm
of each other.
I'm just going to keep dropping in throughout that whole speech. You're not better than me, Will. The sound effect in the background.
Thanks, Kevin. That means a huge amount to me, and I really appreciate it. A few films came up for me that.
Right. There we go. We're into the list now.
We're into the list, right? And I'm actually going to start with one that I'm bringing up because I know it's not on any fucking list. No one's brought it up. I don't think anyone has seen it. And it's a film that made me realise that films get made in Ireland, okay? So I was about 6 or 7. I come home from Cork on a Friday night, as usual, and we turn on the
Late
Late Show.
Come home from Cork? Where were you living?
Every Friday. Did I not tell you that? I told you
Cork City.
Cork City. Every Friday night, my mother, she was from outside Cork, but that was obviously some sort of marital bargain that herself and my dad made for her moving out to the fucking sticks, was that every Friday night, she was allowed to go back to the Cork City to be able to run free naked on the streets of Cork, on Patrick Street.
Into Michael Guinness.
It was like when we pulled into Rochester's car park, she almost did one of those, just swing open the passenger door and did a tumble roll out.
Legs skedaddling like Flintstones.
Yeah. The fucking handbag just flaking people in the face. But anyway, came back late and I turned on the Late Late Show, and there was a young lad a little bit older than me on the TV, an Irish lad, talking about that he was starring in a film, and there was a bigger actor beside him, and I was like going, he's an Irish boy and he's like just like a little bit older than me, and what the hell is this? And the actor beside him was a very young Liam Neeson, and the young boy was a young actor called Hugh O'Connor. And they were promoting a film which came out called Lamb.
I have seen this.
Have you seen
Lamb? Because you recommended it.
Oh.
Oh, God. It was a child performances.
Did I?
You did, yeah. Lamb. Is Liam Neeson a priest in it?
He is. He's a Christian brother in it. Yeah, he's a Christian brother.
That's it. Yeah, I watched that because you recommended it. And I thought it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. It was a huge shock to me. It's on YouTube.
So 2.5 years ago, I watched it because you recommended it.
Oh, wow. Fair fucking play to you. Now, I revisited it for this on YouTube, and it's one of those, it's a film dealing with a difficult subject, and I think it's kind of tainted by all of the revelations that's come out in the 90s about the Christian Brothers and how much bastards they were. But it was the first Irish film that I knew was an actual Irish film, and it made me aware that, hang on a second, this is fucking, we make films here. This is mad. And that little kid, he was fantastic in that film. And he's going to make another appearance in one of my other picks later on. Hugh O'Connor is still a great performer. But my God, as a young actor, he was absolutely gifted. Really, really good.
If this is going to work, there has to be rules.
Fuck the rules, brother.
That's rule number one. Language like that.
So the first one I'm bringing up is Lamb. It's about a kid played by Hugh O'Connor who is kind of abandoned in a Christian Brother school. He's suffering epileptic fits, and Liam Neeson is a priest who's having a crisis of faith, and he takes the kid away with him to London, where he's effectively going to start a new life with this kid. It's, when you think about the plot now, it feels really icky and weird.
Yeah, but it was a more innocent time, so you wouldn't have read into anything. Do you know what I mean? It would have been like a father figure coming in to take a wayward child and give him a start in life.
Yeah, and that's what it was. But it's got this haunting score by Van Morrison, and holy shit, it has got a tragic ending. So that's kind of one that I didn't even know I was going to bring up, but I thought, you know what?
We love our tragic endings.
Oh yeah. In Ireland, give us a good tragic ending. It all should end with screaming and roaring and misery and raising our voices to God.
We are a mercurial bunch though. We are sort of like, we feel deeply.
I think we're a melancholic nation. We flit between comedy and tragedy at flick of a switch. And all it takes is a couple of drinks.
Yeah. I actually watched the film for the first time because of this topic that does sort of touch upon that.
Right.
I watched two films actually. Just if I can segue off what you just said.
Please.
Great child actors. I went back and I revisited Into the West because I remember watching that as a kid and getting swept up in it.
What's his name?
He's called Tiernanog.
Why is he called that?
He
says he came from a land under the sea.
With two kids that take a horse that they believe is a magical horse, Tírnanog, which is an Irish legend, the magical land where the gods reside, that's over across the ocean. And the two kids in that are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. They're brilliant performers.
Yeah.
And then I think of War of the Buttons, and you know, we've had some brilliant, like, child performers.
We were like gypsies.
Why are you talking to the horse?
Why not?
We have reason to believe that you are harboring a pony. Is that true?
Horse. Horse.
A horse.
Now that you bring up Into the West, I rewatched it for this. I hadn't seen Into the West since it was on video way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And again, another film which made me realise, holy shit, we can make Irish films. And it was actually really entertaining as to watch it as a kid. But it obviously, it definitely came up in conversation, but it was a touchstone for Song of the Sea. Even though we never...
Was it?
Yeah. We never revisited the film. But it was always, there was always times where we said, ah, yeah, a bit like Into the West.
Sense so, memory of it.
There was a sense. And I went on rewatching the film. I went, holy shit, that character is like X character in Song of the Sea. Holy shit, that moment is kind of like that moment in Song of the Sea. And again, it's a sense memory thing. It was obviously embedded in our subconscious. And I feel that there are definitely a lot of little moments from Into the West. We tapped them for Song of the Sea, without question. Definitely have.
I watched a film that I hadn't seen before because of this topic.
Right.
And it's the last film by John Huston. It's called The Dead.
Yes.
And that has a Dan O'Hurley, like great Dan O'Hurley from Halloween 3 and from RoboCop.
Yeah.
Good shooting, son. What's your name, Murphy? Where he is that type of character who is quite mercurial, very personable, very gregarious, lovely, charming, conversational, warm. And then he has a few too many drinks. And he turns halfway through the night and he becomes cantankerous and disagreeable. And he's, you know, prone to outbursts. And of course, then you see him later on and he's fucking conked out. He's in a drunken stupor asleep in the cubbyhole. But it was like, oh, I recognize that so much.
One by one, we're all becoming shades. How long you locked away in your heart the image of your lover's eyes when he told you that he did not wish to live. I've never felt that way myself towards any woman, but I know that such a feeling must be love. Better to pass boldly into that other world in the full glory of some passion than fade and wither dismally with age. Snow is falling. Falling faintly through the universe and faintly falling, like the descent of their last end, upon all the living and the dead.
Set in 1904, it's a chamber piece. It's set over one night, the Feast of the Epiphany, which is January 6th, the last day of Christmas. In Cork, that would be called Little Christmas or Little Women's Christmas. And this family gather together and they basically just regale each other for the night, talking about the past, the politics of the time, the different traditions that are gone. And for me, what I absolutely adored about it, and this is one of the things that sort of I felt like I just drank it up watching all of these Irish films in quick succession, is how beautifully Irish people speak. Obviously, that's James Joyce. We distill down thoughts, feelings, moods in a very distinct and unique way to anyone else. You won't hear English people say certain things a particular way. And for me, I was like, these characters are set in 1904. I could walk into that room. I could talk to every one of them as if they were my aunt, my mom, my uncle, my neighbor, whatever. And I just felt an unusual thing, which is just utter kinship. I was like, I know all these people. I feel very, very comfortable in this room with all these upper class people, as they were, but upper class in an Irish way. Like, we don't have a class system in Ireland, or we didn't for the longest time. And there's just a warmth and a humanity. And what I loved about it was that they were all disagreeing agreeably. And it was like, Asher, Tom, should don't be like that now. Should we go talk about this? That sort of way of like somebody says something that you shouldn't say, which is really cutting and kind of hurtful. Mm-hmm. And then somebody else will come in and they'll just, you know, put a bam on that open wound. And it's sort of this talent that Irish people have for knowing how to coax out good nature out of people. And I just found it beautiful. And it's a story of these people that come together over this dinner, hang out, and there's a lot of regret and a lot of heartbreak, but they carry it with good humour. And it's a lovely fucking Christmas film.
I had the great honour of actually watching that on the big screen in a college room with John Huston's son, Tony Huston, who wrote the screenplay for that and was nominated for an Academy Award for it. And it was fascinating to kind of spend, because he was over at a kind of a mentoring fortnight in the college where I was studying, actually the John Huston Film School, that's where I did my screenwriting masters. And he was a very interesting character, and it was just interesting to hear him regaling stories of like working with his dad on set and stories about like living in Galway, because he lived in Galway for a number of decades, John Huston, and stories about Marlon Brando coming over and Marlon Brando just disappearing in the middle of a meal and being picked up like it was a lashing night and being picked up in a country lane somewhere way down the country. He just walked off into the random country night. It happens. But the dead, watching it on a kind of projected on a large screen, was an incredibly moving film. And it is a film I think you have to watch on a big screen, because it's all about the subtleties, and it's all about the the subtext of what people aren't saying to each other.
When Angelica Huston, who you've worked with,
yes,
which is a fucking great sort of like feather to your cap as yes. well, she gives a phenomenal performance in it, and such a beautiful lilting Irish accent, where I thought, fuck, she's able to do it. Not many people can do an Irish accent. Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise. But, oh my God, she was not perfect. Of course, Agnes Brown is what she did. And I enjoyed that film as well. Agnes Brown, that she directed, is a brilliant Irish film.
I actually totally forgot to revisit that.
She plays Brendan O'Carroll.
And so that's what spawned Mrs. Brown's Boys. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Very good.
Oh God, I'm going to be pivoting, jumping all over the place. I want to say another thing. I watched Mrs. Brown's Boys, the movie.
Did you?
The movie, on a plane heading out to LA. And I don't know whether it was the altitude or the fact that I was giddy because I was going after LA. I was in bits laughing at it. And I think we need to calm the fuck down with the hatred towards Mrs. Brown's Boys. It might not be for you, but it's harmless fucking panto.
Wait a minute.
And the movie, to me, I judged it as like an Austin Powers type film. It was ridiculous and cartoony and so fucking silly that I thought it was very, very funny.
This is the movie.
Like, you can tell that they're all just having the crack. It's not cynical. So, right. Like, calm down. I really enjoyed it. Anyway, my point being, it's not my point, but what I meant to say is that the moment when Angelica Huston is on the stairs and she's hearing one of the fellas at the party, he's singing, and everybody's left the party, and he's just singing an old Irish song, and it reminds her of a young man who was madly in love with her, and he died. And that's all they do, is they just hold on Angelica Huston in the stairs, listening. I'm going to get choked up now. And it's like, it's unfussy and it's beautiful.
It's a perfect moment. Absolutely perfect moment.
So fucking, it's just humanity. That's all it is on screen, is just humanity.
And that ability for just a piece of music to be able to take you away and make you feel such loss. It's not even nostalgia. It's a sense of loss.
It's a very Irish feeling.
It's a melancholy.
It's a pathos.
We are great at hitting that note. We're absolutely brilliant. Can I bring up a film made by a filmmaker who I think is one of our best bloody films, one of the best filmmakers that has emerged in Ireland over the last while? And I'm bringing it up because one of this filmmaker's films had a big effect on my very first film.
My Brothers.
Yeah, on My Brothers.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, should someday. I'm actually in it. I have a cameo in it. I know you know that.
I know.
You
played a clip
You played a clip once before.
I need to. This is going to be a very deep, 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 deep callback. But I feel that now I should come clean. There's a little bit of mischief about my sense of humor, and you mentioned on an episode with Pierce where you were talking about, I think it was cameos, or one of those ones.
What's your cameo, Will?
I did a cameo in my first feature, My Brothers, where I play an arcade guy.
I'm sorry, child. Did I frighten you, child? Oh, I'm sorry. Are you scared? All right, I'll sing to you. God is in his holy temple.
Woo! And you said, I played an arcade man in mine, and I took arcade sound effects, you know, the slot machines going and the ding, 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 and I took a scene from Scary Movie 2, the guy with the, hello, children. With the little hand. And my mate D said, was that Will? So I wonder how many people I fought with that.
Do you know how hard it was to shoot my scene in that? Oh, God. Someday we'll get into it. It was so hard to shoot my scene. It was a miserable day. But I want to bring us back onto that film that I wanted to bring up. And it was in this little period, I think I had set my sights on writing. Oh, I think I might have actually gotten the funding or the screenwriter's funding to write a script from the film board, right? I'd won the pitching award for pitching My Brothers at the pitching competition there. Off the back of that, then I got the money to write the script, which was kind of like, go off there and write a screenplay for that thing, you know, but like a good lad, here's a few bob. And which was massive to me at the time. And I was writing it and I had this kind of crisis in my head when I was trying to figure out the story. I was like going, I need to make the story have a larger plot. There needs to be another character here and a character there and all this sort of stuff kind of going on. And I was really kind of having this moment where I was going, I really need to up this to a different level for it to break through. And I went on a Saturday night with Karen, who weren't married at the time, to the cinema to see the new Pat Short movie. And it was a packed cinema in the Ice Cinema in Galway. And the film was Garage, written by Mark O'Hallan, directed by Lenny Abramson. And
was it Lenny Abramson's first film?
I think no, Adam and Paul was his first film, which was also written by Mark, and he's co-starred in it as well. But Garage is a portrait of a character called Josie, who's Pat, who's this kind of good-natured man with learning difficulties who lives and works in a garage in a small Irish rural village in the middle of the country. So this area of the country has got nothing going for it. And it's kind of funny, but it actually turns out to be quite tragic. And not a huge amount happens, but what does happen in it is monumental and significant for this man who's living a life that is a quality to him, you know what I mean? And it really fucking affected me at how, again, kind of what you're saying about the dead, how understated it was, yet how utterly moving it actually was, and how I was transported into this man's life and his shoes and just living and working in a fucking garage. And I remember the film finishing, and I remember hearing the people behind me, someone saying, well, geez, that was nothing but a load of shite. Because they went in to expect to see the latest Pat Short comedy.
Well,
and it wasn't that at all.
Unbelievables. He's part, for those that aren't familiar, Pat Short is, I guess, what would be the equivalent? He'd be like the Little Britain guys.
Yeah.
An Irish version of that. They were the Dumbelievables.
They were a comedy duo who skyrocketed to superstardom in Ireland in the 90s. Because of, you know, their sketches. They were brilliant because they incorporated the audience and all that sort of stuff. They're really, really brilliant entertainers. So this was not the type of film that was pandering to that audience. But my God, I came out of this film so fucking moved and filled with a resolve to stay the course and be intimate and be true to my characters and write the film that I felt I needed to write. And I really owe a kind of a debt of gratitude to Garage for filling me with that sense of refocus, rather. And I wanted to make myself more Hollywood and more this.
You had your North Star.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, yeah. And I genuinely think Lenny's one of our greatest filmmakers, and he has made fucking cracker after cracker. We've brought up his films before, but he's absolutely brilliant. Mark is a great writer as well.
Are you having a party, Josie?
No, I'm not. God, no. Just a few bits and pieces for me tea.
Tell us, what's new in petrochemicals?
We're open late above the weekends. Just Thursdays, Fridays.
They mentioned something about it on Sky News, all right.
The town looks out for its own, David.
It does, I'd say.
I told you about when I went to see Room in LA, and I was so fucking moved that I couldn't go up and say to him that I loved the film or anything like that, because I was afraid I was going to start crying in front. You know, when you've seen something that is just so fucking powerful and beautiful,
you feel really vulnerable and tender. That's another one. I really had to get Garage out there and big up Lenny. I think Lenny's a brilliant filmmaker.
He is. Adam and Paul is fantastic as well.
Yes.
Do you know what? We're just talking about LA. I was just mentioned LA there, but there was another film that I saw in LA, and it's on my list as well. It's directed by John Crowley. It stars our very own Saoirse Ronan. And because the story, I guess, is about leaving home and going off to a far off land and trying to make it, and that ache, that pull of home, seeing it in LA so far from home, just the time zone alone, I was crushed by it. And it was Brooklyn.
Step over this way, please. Get out of the line. Next. Passport, please.
Welcome to the United States, ma'am.
Dear Rose, I miss you and mother and think about you every day. The most important news is that I have a job and I'm in a boarding house.
I was glad to see you finally got some letters from home today.
I wish that I could stop feeling that I want to be an Irish girl in Ireland.
Homesickness is like most sicknesses. It will pass.
Would you dance with me?
I'm not Irish.
So what were you doing at an Irish dance?
I really like Irish girls.
I met somebody, an Italian fella. We're going to Coney Island at the weekend.
But do you have a bathing costume?
Why didn't you tell me to put my costume on underneath my clothes?
I thought you'd know.
I should say that we don't like Irish people.
Hey, hey.
What? We don't. That is a well-known fact.
It was sudden.
When will they bury her?
You want to go home, I guess.
How would it be for you if I did go home?
I'd be afraid.
Afraid that I wouldn't come back.
Yeah. Home is home. Ireland must seem very backward to you now.
Is that Jim Farrell I saw? He's a catch for someone.
I have a life halfway across the sea.
Your life here could be just as good.
With him going back, I have nobody.
I want you to stay here with me. Home is home.
It's on my list. It's on my list.
Oh, it's a fucking... Look, some of these films you think, like, is that too much of an obvious pick, or is that, like, not obvious enough? But it's just a film that... It's beautifully made by John Crowley, as I said, who's also a lovely man. I met him in Les Arcs, actually. Fucking phenomenal film. And emigration is part of the Irish experience. So to have a film... Like, we've had a couple of them. Like, In America was another one. But for me, Brooklyn was just so potent, so... true, so affecting.
Based on a novel by Colm Tobin and adapted by Nick Hornby. Interesting. Again, you have a lot of our great stuff. There's been collaborations with people from other nationalities, and that's totally fine. That's going to be something I'm going to bang on about later on. But I was going to bring up Brooklyn as well, because it felt real. Because I had an aunt, poor Auntie Mary. And she immigrated with my uncle Tim, Mary Collins and Tim Collins, and they immigrated around the same time, and around the 1930s, 36 and whatnot, to America. And she never had children. She married over there, but she never had children. But when she retired, when her and her husband retired, they moved back to Cork and they settled for the last few decades of her life. But when she passed away, her belongings were kind of divvied out. My family and my father's brothers and sisters took care of the estate. But a little shoebox landed at the end of my bed. And it was, there was a little gym bag from the 1960s or 70s, right? It was sitting there for ages and I kind of didn't, I was a teenager and I was just like, oh, what's that shite? And eventually I opened it up and it was just brimming with letters. And what it was were all of her correspondence that she'd received from home. So they were letters from my great-grandmother to her daughter, talking about, just telling her about the news and all that sort of stuff, and correspondence from her uncles and stuff like that. And each one, most of them were just casual and just kind of like passing the time and passing news. And every so often you'd hit one, which was like a punch in the stomach, because there was one letter I remember, it was from a man called Patton Milan, who was her uncle. And he was telling her, informing her that her sister had died. You know?
Oh God, yeah.
And he laid it out. He laid out all the details in like 10 pages of like handwritten letter. And I read it and I said, these are the letters that she would have poured over and cried her heart out to. And this is all she fucking had. And so Brooklyn taps into that. I always thought about the tragedy, how hard it must be for them and for so many of the Irish diaspora. Who basically said, you're killing that life. That life is gone. You know, mm-hmm. not killing it, but you're never going back. And how much that must have hurt, how much grief and homesickness they must have felt by having had to do that. So for me, Brooklyn was such a moving, beautifully observed piece of drama. And I think everyone should watch it. It's a great film, really great film.
Oh, it is a great film. But as I was saying about the dead, it's sort of that thing of like, when you're amongst your own, there's almost like this, it's like your molecules are in the right place. Mm. You feel like you don't have to explain yourself or you don't have to translate yourself, that you can just, I don't know. It's a unique thing. And I felt for such a very simple story of, but will she go this way or that way? It was monumental, to use a word you just used earlier on. Yeah. And I thought it was beautifully rendered. Similarly to that, I'll mention another one to you.
Right.
And it's a story that tapped into a scandal in Ireland, and that had to do with, you know, Ireland for the longest time. Well, there's a couple of things. We tend to focus on the troubles that we've had as a country. They make great fodder for story. And one of them was a scandal that had to do with unmarried mothers and giving up their babies.
Yeah.
And it was Stephen Frears' latest Irish film. Like, he's done The Van and he's done The Snapper. He's done a few like great Irish films, but this one was Philomena with Judi Dench and Steve Coogan. And it was about that, almost like the elderly version of someone like a Saoirse Ronan, but she went off to London. Mm-hmm. She had a family, but before she had done that, she'd had a baby and she'd had to give that baby up for adoption. We've had films like the Magdalen sisters,
yeah, based on the Magdalen Laundries,
Laundries. I was thinking Magdalen Laundries for a second.
Yeah.
And it's like an investigation into her past and tracking down the baby that she gave up. And I used that, I was talking to you, maybe it was on one of our Patreon episodes, I was talking to you about Gar, and Gar came to a screenwriting talk. He's a mutual friend of ours. Mm. And at that screenwriting talk, I used Philomena as an example of a perfect script on screen. It hits all the beats in the right spot. It has a great arc for Judi Dench's character. The mid-act climax, as you would use, is perfectly placed and it's really devastating. And it's also a very enjoyable, warm film that is about a very heartbreaking subject. And the way that they write that line and they make this very entertaining film that is so beautiful that I think it's like one of our best films ever made. That, like, my criteria for this category was that it had to be a film that could only exist because of Ireland. Mm. Whether that's Irish filmmakers, if the fathers never met their mother, the film would never exist. Or it had to be specifically about something that was so true to Ireland and nothing else. And that's one of the great sins of our country, is what happened to young girls who ended up falling pregnant out of marriage and being forced, because of the oppressive nature of the church at the time and the culture at the time, to give up their children for adoption. And I think it's a very important film, as well as being a very entertaining film.
Do you think I should do a human interest story? Philomena, how are you?
I had a hip replacement last year, Martin. Titanium, so it won't rust.
Otherwise, I'd have to oil you like the Tin Man.
Is that right?
Oh, no.
He's just joking, Mum.
Oh. I was going to ask if it would be possible not to use my real name when you write the story. What about Anne Boleyn? That's a lovely name. Oh, somebody had that.
We're going to have to use your real name, Philomena.
I only want to know if he's all right.
Perhaps these older nuns should help us with some of the details.
I don't think that's going to be possible.
Why not?
You're a journalist.
I used to be.
Martin's a Roman Catholic.
Yes, well, no, I used to be. My guess is that Anthony was adopted and sent to America.
I think I would like to go. I'd like to know if Anthony ever thought of me. I've thought of him every day. I did not abandon my child. He was taken from me.
She's been looking for him. She's spent her whole life trying to find him.
Kevin, I haven't seen Philomena.
Oh, you would fucking love it. I swear, you'd absolutely love it.
It's one of these bloody films that I have taped. It's been on TV and it says, oh, there's Philomena, I'm going to tape it and we're going to watch it because I know myself and Karen would watch it. And it's just fallen through the gaps. But we are going to watch it.
Get into any details, but Steve Coogan is fantastic in it, and Steve Coogan also, he gives a great performance as the IRA farmer
his Partridge show.
Yeah, the Partridge.
Brilliant. Well, he's got big Irish connections, as every Irish person knows that Steve Coogan's.
Yeah, he's one of ours to claim.
Mayo.
But Judi Dench gives a faultless Irish performance as well. Like, she's so specifically Irish. Like, yeah. She just feels like your nan. But it's a wonderful film.
You brought up something, and I think this is the perfect segue for me, right, to talk about. I mentioned to you last night that I had discovered a film, and it's a fucking banger, and it kind of blew my bloody mind, right? I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think I say it in every episode.
I can't finish a sentence.
I love doing this podcast because I find something that I never knew existed, and it just blows my mind, right? In every episode, I find something that kind of blows my mind.
And?
Last night.
Because?
You recommended a film to me, and I watched it.
No, you loved it in this podcast as well, because?
Because we have great listeners.
Oh, and God, fuck it. I'm not going to get anything out of you in this episode. Go on.
I was trawling through lists and all that sort of stuff. Just to see what, trying to do my due diligence. Is there anything up there in the top that I haven't seen that I should see that I have missed? And Philomena has already won. And then this film I saw popping up on some of these big critic lists somewhere, like high enough on the list. And I went, what the fuck is this film? Never heard of it before. And I said, I tried to do an old Google, and there it was sitting on YouTube.
Banshees of Inisherin.
Not that. It's only about 70 minutes long. And this film is a documentary called The Rocky Road to Dublin. Okay? It came out...
I've not seen it.
Holy shit, Kevin. This is 70 minutes that ties into what you were talking about there, about the Magdalen laundries and the strict hands the church had on Ireland. This film was banned in Ireland until the 90s. Okay?
When did it come out then?
1967.
I was going to say...
So it's a documentary made by, he was a journalist and filmmaker called Peter Lennon. He's originally Irish, but he was working in France as a foreign correspondent for The Guardian at the time. And he was covering, I think he was covering theatres and festivals and stuff like that. And he was going to be going back, this is 1960, 66, 67. He was going to be covering the Dublin Film Festival. So he said, you know, he'd heard from friends back home that kind of that Ireland was opening up a bit, that because, you know, that we're becoming a little bit more liberal. And he went, well, I'm going to get a camera. I get a cameraman and we're going to go back and we're going to capture this new liberal Ireland.
And God, no.
What he found was not the liberal Ireland that he was promised. He came back by and he fucking tore strips out of the country. And he created a documentary, which is this vertical slice of Ireland from the Anglo-Saxon elite that you were alluding to earlier on, the people who have like horses and all that sort of stuff, down to the working class. And he fucking tore strips out of the country and what's happened to the country by interviewing all sorts of people. Like, he interviewed writers who had been censored at the time, Liam O'Faolan, and he got the Irish foreign minister at the time, Conor Cruise O'Brien. He got the Irish censor, who was working hand in hand with the church, and the fucking smug, contemptuous nature of those pricks.
The rest of the world was engaged in the swinging 60s.
Yes, not Ireland.
And Ireland, yeah.
The walls were, the fecking walls were 100 miles high. And in it, he's talking to Liam O'Faolan. And Liam O'Faolan, who was a man in his probably 70s at the time, right? Who lived through our battle for independence and the Civil War, said in it, he said, if the martyrs of 1916, who were the soldiers who died in the Easter Rising of 1916, if they could be alive to see how Ireland was in the 1960s, they would be disgusted, because we went from the tyranny, he says in the documentary, we went from the tyranny and oppression of the colonialist oppressors to the tyranny and oppression of the Catholic Church. And he said, and this was a revelation to me, which fucking blew my mind about our parents' generation and the generation before that. He said the children born in Ireland in the 1930s and 40s, which were my parents, were the children that were told to shut up and say your prayers and be fucking thankful for what you had, and don't listen to that sin. They were born into an institution. It wasn't just the Magdalen Laundries. The entire of Ireland became an institution because of the Catholic Church. Because there was a vacuum in Ireland when there was a vacuum for the running of the things like schools and hospitals and whatnot. And the church just swooped in and kind of helped the Irish government at the time fill that vacuum, and created a really oppressive, censored state. And this film filled me with fury. But it was like a missing piece. It was like a missing piece fell into place. And I thought it was one of the most powerful documentaries in
Ireland.
Where
did you watch it?
On YouTube. It's on YouTube, The Rocky Road to Dublin.
Some of the chief dangers to chastity would be going around with bad companions who give scandal, wearing very mini skirts, seeing bad plays and films, or reading books, knowing that they are bad.
Perhaps one of them will grow up to be a school teacher and write a book like The Dark, judged indecent 3 years ago and banned. McGarren was dismissed from his post by a parish priest. The National Teachers Organization and the Minister for Education abandoned the case. For half a century, one of Ireland's most notorious exports has been its writers.
Really fucking powerful bit of cinema.
I'm going to watch that.
Really, really powerful.
But we also experienced that, like, you know.
Yes.
Ireland, I remember, I'm a child of divorce, and I remember being in school in Cork, and I was the only kid in the class from what would be called a broken home.
Yeah.
And my mother could not tell anybody that she was divorced because it was scandalous. It was like separated. That was as far as you could go. And divorce wasn't legalized until...
Yeah, 94, yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. And I remember just thinking, God, that is so strange to me, because you'd see it constantly with like celebrities and TV shows and films. Divorce was part of everyone else's day-to-day life. And that was just one aspect of... Like the other thing was, my granddad used to drink in, I think it was the Overliable pub, and it was a men's only bar. So if my mom had to get my granddad out of the pub, I would have to be sent in to give him a message, because she wouldn't be allowed to set foot in the door.
Of course, it was a men's only.
And that's, we're talking about 92, 93, 94. Strange. How fast the country has changed.
And that is why, when we're talking about, as I said earlier on, when we're talking about us not really having that much of a homegrown film industry until the beginning of the 1980s, really.
Yeah, with Outcasts.
It's because of the censorship and the control the church had on what was outputted, what was allowed to be consumed. And it wasn't until that those shackles were loosened or began to loosen, did we actually begin to have our own industry at that
stage? So I watched the very first film that was ever produced by the Irish Film Board for this topic, which was The Outcasts.
Oh, wow.
Miley is in it from Glenroe.
No way.
Glenroe being an Irish soap that's been off the air for about 25 years. But still, yep. If you were to play the theme tune to that, I would get the shivers because I'd know that school is in the morning. And that was quite daring, actually. It's not my kind of film. It's very arty. It was very ambitious and very audacious. But they have sex scenes in that film.
Oh, wow.
Like, they're running up against the wall. And I thought, Jesus, this... You don't even see that at the moment in Irish films.
Right.
And to think of what you're saying there and how much of a reaction that was to what had come before. We know had, maybe not censorship free, but we had the ability to make our own films, tell our own stories. And one of the first ones was The Outcasts. Yeah.
Fascinating. I've never seen that, but I really, really, I strongly recommend anyone who's interested in having a snapshot of Ireland in that period to go on YouTube and watch The Rocky Road to Dublin. Brilliant, brilliant documentary. And it doesn't pull its punches. And that's what got it banned for 30 years, because it was speaking the truth. Oh, can I speak another thing about it?
No.
Halfway through it, right, they cut to a women's ward. And you've got all, like, you know, six beds on either side of the ward. And there's these women sitting there smiling. And in the middle of the ward, there's this big, tall, charismatic priest holding court. And he's singing some, like, you know, American song, like, you know, and all of them are just, like, doe-eyed over him. And especially the matron, she's clapping along. But, you know, they spend 2 days with this charismatic Dublin priest. And I was looking at him and I was going, he's kind of familiar. He's fucking kind of familiar. His name was Father Michael Cleary. And it turned out that Michael Cleary at the time, like, was effectively married to his housekeeper and had two illegitimate children. Yeah. And he was in this documentary pontificating about the chastity of priests and the sacrifice that he makes. Because I'd love to be married and have children and have a family and all
that. Meanwhile, he's breaking beds.
Exactly. He's fucking breaking. And this was the thing. The church fucked us, for lack of a better word.
Well, yeah. Do you know, So as you can probably tell as you're listening to this, it's more like a grab bag of things that we've seen that we love or things that we want to recommend. I'm going to mention one that I discovered because of going back to fill in the blanks. And one,
right,
I think is a fucking stunning film. It's directed by Carol Reed, who went on to do The Third Man a couple of years after this. It stars James Mason. It's set in Belfast during the Irish Free State.
As they say in the opening crawl, in the city of Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also stars Dan O'Hurley.
It does, yeah.
I was shocked.
Odd Man Out. It's set in 1947 in Belfast. James Mason plays an IRA man who, during a botched raid, he ends up killing a guy in a scuffle. And they flee. Him and Dan O'Hurley and the other guys in his sort of raiding party. But he gets left behind. He falls out of the back of the car. The film is replete with gregarious and colourful characters. But it's a snowy Belfast. He is gravely injured. He has a woman that he's madly in love with. And the city is hostile towards him. You don't know who you can trust. The police are out to get him. And it's one night in a very dangerous and treacherous Belfast.
Get him into the car, quick! Johnny!
Did I kill that man?
And you walk.
Did I?
Give me a stand-up.
And it's a beautiful-looking film. It's probably one of the nicest-looking Irish films, other than your films. And I fucking loved it. Carol Reed's Odd Man Out.
Do you mean to say the three of you come back here without Johnny?
I'm handling this.
Without your chief?
Don't you be giving out of here.
I'm not for you. I'm not against you. But I can't afford to get mixed up in this.
Hey, you!
Well, maybe you don't believe me, but I'm telling you, there's lots of people that pay me a grand price for Johnny.
There's a reward out for that fella. £1,000.
But it's Johnny.
Yes, it's him, all right.
What do you want me to do with him?
Get rid of him. Tip him out somewhere in the dark, away from here.
And I think I recommended it to you to try and get it watched for this episode.
It is. And I'm seconding that and recommending it. I thought it was a really, really good film as well. I was so glad I watched it. And I actually enjoyed it more when it went into its in the second half.
And it got more phantasmagoric.
Yes, and we started, the cast of characters started to expand and how he's getting passed around, like different characters who were interacting with him and whatnot. I really enjoyed that.
It had a stunning ending.
If you are real, stretch out your hand to mine.
If you like The Third Man, and who doesn't, watch it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I would say that's the best comparison is, look, this is an Irish version of The Third Man. And again, another example of a really fucking good film that I wouldn't have watched or even known about if it wasn't for this podcast. So thanks, podcast.
You know, we're talking about Belfast. There's one other one that I think when you're talking about films that deal with the Troubles, there's a few like amazing films that are incredibly powerful. But one that I absolutely love is Bloody Sunday by Paul Greengrass.
It's a really good film, yeah.
Starring James Nesbitt about Bloody Sunday. It's straight ahead. It's visceral. It's rattling. It drops right into the action. It's incredible filmmaking. And I thought I would quickly mention it there as we were talking about Belfast.
I have seen nothing today that reflects in any way with discredit on our forces.
This afternoon, 27 people were shot.
You know what happened, right? Get the story right, because it's bound to come home.
13 of them lay dead tonight.
That's brilliant. I'm going to stick with Belfast for a minute. Talk about a film that came out in 2013, I think, and it is a comedy drama set at the height of the Troubles in around the 1970s, and it's called Good Vibrations. A delight of a film.
Once upon a time in the city of Belfast, there lived a boy named Terry.
Do you want to come back to my mum and dad's?
No. Do you want to go back to my mum and dad's?
No.
I want to open a record shop. We had every kind of beautiful record on our shelves.
I'll put that record out.
You're pissed.
So what? You're making a record.
Will you record us too?
Good Vibrations isn't a record shop. It's not a label. It's a way of life.
Yeah,
Lisa
Barros,
Glenn Laybourne.
Yeah, they're fucking lovely people.
This is a film based on a true story. It's on Disney Plus. It's based on a true life story of Terry Hooley, played by Richard Dormer, and I love his voice. He's like, I'm from Belfast. He just has this really funny. He's got a brilliant voice.
Slide on there, mate.
I don't give a fuck about your Catholics and Protestants. I just love rock and roll. So he loved music, this guy called Terry Hooley, and he opened a record store on a bombed out street where everything was bombed out, and even the bank manager was going, hang on a second, you're opening a fucking record store. And he says, it's because I love soul. You know, who doesn't love fucking soul, man? You know, it's brilliant. But he he's just this really charismatic individual. And I love stories about people who fucking love shit in times and places where they shouldn't love shit. And this is just, he's a delightful individual. He was, you know, the song Teenage Kicks? He was the guy who discovered them and made a deal to kind of launch them into the stratosphere and all that sort of stuff. But he fucking squandered everything. He had no business sense whatsoever. And he's just a brilliantly charismatic individual to spend, you know, 90 minutes with. This film is great crack. It's a fun Troubles movie. And I'm recommending it now because it's rare that you get a fun Troubles movie.
I'm glad you did.
Good film. And the teenage kicks right through the night.
We're getting down to it now. I'm going to quickly mention two Brendan Gleeson films that I love. He has so many, but one of them is I Went Down by Paddy Breathnock. 1997 film. It's in that era of the Quentin Tarantino-esque sort of very verbal crime capers. It's a knockabout comedy kind of, lots of needle drops. enjoyable, highly enjoyable, I would say. Brendan Gleeson and Peter MacDonald, they're sort of like a double act. They are assigned the case to escort this guy who has been messing around with a gangster's wife, and there are other shenanigans that go on. And it's a road movie with the two of them, and it's great crack.
Do you know who Frank Groven is? Old associate of mine. I need someone to go down, find him, bring them back. If you don't want to do it, don't. Just give me £25,000 and I won't kick your head in.
Please, I'll help us. We could only get one cool one. That was one my nephew had.
Is this a dream?
No. It's real.
Where are you taking me?
Get in.
Oh, jeez!
Never make love to a gangster's wife. Jeez, you can't really enjoy yourself.
Really needed it. Freak
for new fight.
All we have to do is deliver him and this is over.
I'll give you £50,000 if you let me walk away from this.
I'm that close to just getting rid of you.
Just do it, huh?
Yeah.
That's all there is for you.
That's all there is, Chicolito.
That's one I'm going to recommend. I remember at the time it was always highly recommended by Empire, and it's very hard to track down, but it's worth tracking down. The next year then, Brendan Gleeson went on to The General by John Boorman.
Yes.
And that is a fucking belter of a film. When you're writing a script, you want great scenes, scenes that sort of like pop. And that film is just filled with them, like the way that he would interrogate or deal with guys who he thinks have betrayed him, or the way that they would rob paintings from a gallery, like the cleverness, the wit.
Do you know anything about art?
Art? No. Do you?
No, I don't know anything about art, but I do know what I like. To steal.
This is the only Vermeer in private hands. It would probably fetch in excess of £20 million on the open market.
From acclaimed director John Boorman.
That's class, Gary. Tell you what is class, though. Security system.
You're a clever fella, Bernard.
Think I could get a job in the police?
The true story of a chancer.
What are you? A
loyalist.
Are you a Republican, Carl?
Criminal.
Of a villain.
£80,000.
Good day at the races.
They think I know your wiles and your ways. And I do.
That looks about £80,000.
A father.
People in our profession shouldn't have families.
I want you to smile, do you hear me?
A lover.
Why don't we go out tonight? Just you and me and Tina.
A thief.
Love has been my hobby.
A general.
You can't stay here.
You will be forcibly removed.
John Voight is in it, and he's quite convincing, I think, as like a superintendent. It's a really fucking entertaining gangster film, and they managed to make who I have to believe is a thuggish, or was a thuggish bastard, into a lovable old rogue. There have been a few films that have been made about him. Brendan Gleeson's character in that, Ordinary Decent Criminals with Kevin Spacey, which I've not seen. Apparently it's not very good.
I saw it and I wasn't that impressed by it. But particularly because The General came out and did it far better.
It's fucking brilliant. So I'm recommending that as well.
You're The General. You should get more than us.
Who became a legend.
I will.
There's one I gotta quickly mention, because, but I don't need to mention it for long, because I think both of us have championed this film an awful lot, and it's way up there for me as one of my favourite Irish films ever. And it's Colleen Kewan, the Irish girl, came out last year.
Oh my God, I completely forgot about it. How did that happen?
It beautiful, beautiful, beautiful film. I absolutely adore it. Kevin adores it too. We sung its praises so much last year. Colin Bernard's adaptation of the short story Foster by Claire Keegan. This, for me, this film it captures a side of Ireland which I recognised, which is an Ireland in which we're not very good at
emoting,
saying to people, we're not very good at telling people we love them, especially people who we really fucking love. And the only way we do it is by showing them that we love them. And I know that...
I know exactly the scene you really encapsulates that, where...
Yeah.
Such a tender film.
It's a fucking beautiful, beautiful, tender film, which just perfectly observed
That's a good word for it. Yeah, it's a beautifully observed film.
Yeah. Catherine Clinch, who plays the girl in it, she's just amazing. The grown-ups she goes to stay with, played by Carrie Crowley and Andrew Bennett, they captured the sense of kind, heartbroken people. And the film had me in bits.
Me too.
But also it elevated me, it lifted me up. And I thought it was such a beautiful, beautiful story. And I was delighted.
It's a perfect film.
Yeah. Not a big budget film. A small little...
Yes, but...
Funded by T.J. Carr.
All these films that I've been mentioning so far, they do something which is very, very, very difficult to do. And it's they make it look easy.
It's a good point. Yeah. And it's not easy.
So my last film that I want to mention will... My favorite film, and it started at the top, and I went, well, that's number one, and I'm going to go down the list, and I'm going to sort of like fill in the blanks.
Right.
And Colin Kuhn would definitely be in there. As I said at the top of the episode, I came away from this feeling like the films that I'd resisted watching or I had to begrudgingly make time for completely transformed my view of my own Irishness, the quality of the talent that Ireland has produced. We're a very small country, a tiny nation, very few cities, and the cities that we have are quite small. The talent that has come up through that, the stories that have been told that have gone global, and some of them haven't gone global, but they're still so important to like me and you. I just felt so fucking proud of what we've put out from 1982 onwards. And a lot of that has also been with the great help of the British community. I mean, Ken Loach made one of the most fervently Irish Republican films you could make. But that's down through the line. Like, there's so many great movies that have been, I don't know, British filmmakers who have had that support and they've had that history of filmmaking in the UK, bringing that to Ireland, helping us tell some of our best stories. And one of them, for me, is directed by another Brit, Alan Parker, and the film...
Hey, what's this?
What's what?
Have you got soul? If so, the world's hardest working band is looking for you. Contact Jay Rabbit.
I'm putting a band together.
Do you need a singer?
Wise men say...
Well, what kind of music are we going to be playing, Jimmy? Soul.
Soul?
The Commitments. There's two things about it, why this is my number one. One of them is that it's the most crowd-pleasing Irish film I can think of.
Yeah.
I was too young when this film came out, but it always felt brand new, no matter what age that I would visit it. It has scenes that are utterly euphoric.
Yeah.
Like the moment when the band coalesces and they perform for the first time and they blow the fucking roof off the place.
Yeah.
But it's about a band of working class people that are just bursting with talent. They have that brief moment where they get to show what they're made of and they implode. And I don't know if it's because all the characters are so utterly working class and they punch way above their weight, and it's something that these days we've lost entirely. Like in the 90s when I was growing up, I felt like working class people had the right stuff, and everywhere I looked, all facets of entertainment and culture were infiltrated by the working class. They were TV presenters, they were novelists, they were pundits, they were radio presenters, they were actors, they were singers, all the pop stars were working class. The fashion houses were like run by working class people like Alexander McQueen. It was just everywhere you looked, people that didn't have the means got there because a culture that lifted up working class people to show what they were made of, and the entertainment was booming. And The Commitments is that story, I think, in a nutshell. And nowadays, everywhere I look, it's all privileged people. The working class are gone. They've been entirely eradicated. I think The Commitments stands as a testament to what the working class can do. And it's also an incredibly entertaining film with an amazing soundtrack and a brilliant cast. And when we made Grabbers, the director would sometimes consult me and say, like, who do you think would be right for certain roles? And Brona Gallagher was on the list for playing Una, the bar lady. And I begged, please go with Brona Gallagher. I don't get starstruck. I've met some pretty big people in my time. I met Janet Jackson, didn't even know who she was. But when I met Brona Gallagher, I was so starstruck because I think The Commitment is the coolest Irish film that's ever been made. It still holds up, and I fucking love it.
Oh, man. So we've both worked with a commitment desk, because I worked with Maria Dial Kennedy on Wolfwalkers. So,
who is incredible. Do you know what? Can I say to you as well? Yeah. This is going to be kind of embarrassing. I was out for a drink with the director of Grabbers in London in Soho, and she had, she's always around, I think, working. She was just doing the Titanic show. They had that
musical
TV retelling of Titanic.
Oh, the TV show, yeah.
Yeah. And she was in a bar. And I said to John, the director, oh my God, that's Maria Dial Kennedy. I want to say hello. And he said, dude, say hello to her. And I was like, I think she's fucking brilliant. I think I should tell her. And he said, dude, the actors love that. And I went up to her and I... and I think it was like, so just a complete fucking... half drunk strangers rocking up and going, I think you're brilliant. I just wanted to say, I think you're absolutely brilliant. I've been watching you in Titanic and it's amazing. And she was like, oh yeah, thanks. Thank you very much. And went back to a conversation, which I had completely, you'd be shocked to know, interrupted.
Brilliant.
But yeah, so you worked with her as well?
Yeah, she was lovely. Absolutely lovely. Again, in the animation world, you work with someone when they're doing voice records. If you're lucky, for a couple of days for that part, she was just there for maybe one day. I think that was it. She was really nice. She was very sweet. The Commitments is also on my list, Kevin. I rewatched it for my research for this. And my God, did I love it. I absolutely love it. My foot was tapping. I was singing along with the songs. I just thought it was a fucking riot of a film. And I was so proud of Ireland because of this film, and it broke through. This is one of these films that went on tour and had its soundtrack, like it was platinum selling and all that sort of, they had a couple of soundtracks based off the back of this. So it's on my list, an absolutely brilliant pick. I love it. And of course it's a part of the Barrett Stone trilogy, the Roddy Doyle series of books, which were fantastic.
Your van made a trumpet.
You're the same age as me, da.
You may speak the truth, for I'm 16 years younger than B.B. King.
You've heard of B.B. King?
I jammed with the man.
Piss off.
Leicester Mecca 1972. Didn't give him me best, though, with a bit of a head cold.
What's your name, pal?
Joey the Lips Fagan.
And I'm Jimmy the Bollocks Rabbit.
I earned me name for me horn playing.
Why would you want to join us?
The Lord sent me. The Lord blows my trumpet.
What did Abel Knievel want?
God sent him.
What? God sent him. The fucking Suzuki.
I have to bring up like one of the most obvious ones for my pick, because before 2000, if you'd ask anyone to name an Irish filmmaker, two names would only ever come up. There was Neil Jordan, the other one, Jim Sheridan. And Jim Sheridan made some crackers. I rewatched My Left Foot. Jesus Christ, it's brilliant. Also starring young Hugh O'Connor as young Christy Brown. Christy was a person who's cerebral palsy and turned out to be an amazing artist and novelist and writer in his own right. He was just dealt an incredibly bad hand, but it's a powerful portrait of resilience and kind of perseverance and just a fury and a determination. And it scored several Oscar nominations, a win for Brenda Fricker. I'm pretty sure Daniel Day-Lewis won an Oscar for multiple, you know, nominations. And it put Irish cinema on the map. This is one of those World Cup moments. I remember when My Left Foot was going up for the Academy Award. It was Ireland in the World Cup where we came out and we showed the world that we can make cinema. And it was incredibly...
What year was that?
1989. And so
I was too young.
And off of the back of that, that was really one of the films that really spurred the rejuvenation of the Irish Film Board, because Jim Sheridan went on, he made The Field, the adaptation of the John B. Keane play, which is a really powerful bloody film as well, which Richard
Harris. I had to watch that in school. I couldn't go back to it because of that. It's so tied into to sitting there and studying it in English class.
Yeah, it's a great film. The play is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I won't go into my experience with the play. I had a brilliant fucking experience with the play once. He then went on to make, for me, it was my favourite Irish film, and I think it still is my favourite Irish film, because it's a film which is immensely entertaining. It's rabble-rousing. It's got an amazing performance. It's a fantastic soundtrack. It's funny. It's gripping. It's heartbreaking. It's heart-wrenching. And it's all true. And it's in the name of the Father.
It was a time of innocence.
No property, no law, just love.
What should we call you?
Call me Wales, come on.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine. Do the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you!
In the wake of the Guildford pub bombing deaths, the government has responded with emergency legislation and increased police powers of search and arrest.
Get him up!
I have a right to speak to my son.
You are in trouble, Conlon.
What are you charging me with?
The murders of five people.
You're out of your mind!
Who taught you how to make the bomb, Jerry?
I didn't do this. What are you trying to do to me?
Star, what are you doing in here?
Conspiracy to murder.
Their arrest was only the beginning.
My name's Giuseppe Conlon. I'm an innocent man, so's my son.
Of a remarkable journey.
All of the defendants claim that they were subjected to physical and mental abuse while under police custody.
We're never harmed in any way.
How do you find the defendants?
Guilty as charged.
From the hands of a government.
This is your home for the rest of your life.
Who knew they were innocent.
What are we going to do now?
Nothing.
To the heart of a lawyer.
This conspiracy of silence has kept my client behind bars for 14 years.
Determined to prove it.
There's guilty as sin.
In the name of justice. In the name of truth. In the name of love. In the name of the Father.
Yeah, that is a powerful film. Put it on today and it will grab you by your collar from the opening titles with that U2 song and the actual bomb going off in Guildford. It won't let you go until the very end, and you will be sobbing tears and you'll be laughing as you kind of walk in the shoes of Jerry Conlon, who is falsely accused along with his dad and all these other people of committing this terrible atrocity. It pointed a finger at the injustice that was carried out in so many Irish people. Again, films are great at pointing out systematic injustices.
The courtroom scenes in that are brilliant. Prison scenes in that are incredible.
I want to highlight the talents of Daniel Day-Lewis and all of the cast, particularly Pete Postlethwaite as well. Again, Daniel went really method for this. He was in...
He became Irish and he's been Irish ever since.
Yeah, we're claiming him as our own. I think it's fair enough to claim him at this stage. He, for like research for this, he, like, you know, obviously stayed in character for the entire time, spoke in a Belfast accent for the entire duration of the filming. But then in research, he endured sleep deprivation where he was locked in solitary confinement and kept awake for 3 days straight. He was interrogated for an entire day by former British investigators and subjected to some of the similar tactics that Jerry Conlon was put under and the other people who confessed for the bombing. He wanted to go through that process because he wanted to truly understand how someone could sign a confession when they know they're truly innocent. And he said, I want you to make me do that. I want you to make me
break me
to a crime I didn't commit. Break me. Absolutely break me. And this is one of those films I never expected, but this is one of those films that I had on videotape that I watched over and over and over and over again. Because it's an incredibly well-told story. Fucking so well-told story.
It's like The Commitments in that it's a cool film. You would wear a t-shirt from that film.
Yeah. Jim Sheridan was a bit of a rock star. Jim Sheridan is one of these people who in real life, I've only ever seen him speak in real life, but he's just one of these great raconteurs. He's kind of like got a real hangdog expression about him. But through whatever gifts he's been given, he has been able to channel those gifts to incredible results using cinema and produce some of our best films. He is one of our best cinematic storytellers, along with Neil Jordan, but he really put us as a country that has got a strong cinematic voice on the map. We owe him and Neil Jordan a huge debt of gratitude.
The Michel de Brunder.
That is a perfect way Oh, Jesus Christ. That's a deep cut. Anyone who's not Irish won't get it. Anyone who is Irish will get it
also,
immediately.
Don't look it up. Don't try to get it.
Just assume it's a feat of incredible talent.
A statement, my lord, which vindicates all of these people, all these innocent people.
My lord,
people,
I need to see a copy of
someone,
this statement.
Either that man or his superior or his superior's superior ordered that these people be used as scapegoats by a nation that was baying for blood.
My lord!
In return for the innocent blood spilled on the streets of Guildford, and by God,
Mrs.
you've got
Pierce
your blood,
is making
Mr.
a political
Nixon.
Speech. This is
you've
outrageous.
You've got the blood of Giuseppe Conley, you've got the lifeblood of Carol Richardson, and you've got 15
Mrs.
years
Pierce,
of blood and sweat
sad.
And pain from my client, whose only crime was that he was bloody well
Paul.
Irish, and he was foolish, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, I think we did really well there. I think we've managed to avoid all the landmines, apart from my hot take about, you know, the Irish being a nation of fucking begrudgers.
Well, you might as well hand back in your passport. Obviously, it's important that we say that we've got Pierce, who are great filmmakers.
And we've got Pierce, who's a great filmmaker.
Who's a great filmmaker as well. We've got Jamie, we've got Stephen,
Hannigan,
and
Shields,
Kate,
Dolan.
Who've all made cracking Irish
You're
films.
Just dropping names here as if they're like characters from Friends. We got Monica, we got Rage, we got Ross. Yeah. We got to tell.
I should give their surnames. But we haven't. I avoided any films that were made by people who were friends of mine and or people who were friends of the family because I didn't want to be selecting. I didn't want to be saying yours. I prefer yours than yours and all this sort of stuff. So just what I'm avoiding.
Yeah. And Dave Minogue's film, which I love, Poster Boys.
Poster Boys, yes, of course.
But we've had our friends on the podcast. And we've mentioned their films in the past, so I feel like I wanted to focus on the ones that we haven't talked about before and
yes.
Hopefully swerve some of the really obvious ones like Michael Collins or Far and Away. No, that's a joke. But yeah, I think the Irish film industry has produced some stellar films. If you're unfamiliar with any of the ones we've mentioned here, do yourself a favour, treat yourself, seek them out. We'll put them in our letterboxd list. And, also, be sensible. This Paddy's Day. Call it Paddy's Day, not Patty's Day.
Oh, Lordy. Listen, anyone who calls it Paddy's Day, you immediately, in the company of Irish people particularly, you're going to get some sort of curse put on.
And don't order a car bomb drink either. Don't do that.
Oh, God. I had an Irish car bomb in New York, actually. Quite nice.
I never took you for an alky.
I don't really drink anymore, Kevin. But back in my old days. My younger days.
Listen.
My olden days.
That'll do, I think.
Great episode.
I love being Irish. Honest to Christ.
As I said, before 2000, there was just two names. We now have multiple names of people who are known throughout the world for making films. And it's like,
nobody knows
me.
I
know it's going to be It's going to be... Kevin, we all know you.
All right, listen, Michal, thanks a million for recommending that episode. We are going to do our Patreon picks next. Oh, I always struggle to say Patreon. We threw it to our patrons to pick a couple of episodes for us. We gave them a selection of 10 or 12. I can't remember what they were. The top two are the ones we're going to do. And I said to you, which one do you want? Which one will I take? I may as well just tell you now that the next episode that I'm doing is Best Interrogation Scene.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
So,
In the Name of the Fucking Father.
There we go. Mm. Or The Wind That Shakes the Barley, when they're pulling out the fingernails.
Oh, God.
Oh, Christ.
God.
I nearly fainted.
I rewatched that today. Oh, God, the agony.
Horrendous. Horrendous.
Yeah.
I loved in The Wind That Shakes the Barley, actually. They when they were holding up some of the British army fellows, shut your hole. I have that in Grabbers as well. It's the last thing that Lisa says to the monster before she blows it up. It's like, shut your hole. And you also have it in Screech's Reach.
Yeah. We use that. We actually, I'm using shut your hole and holes a lot. It's a lovely turn of phrase that we use.
It is.
Lovely.
I will me hole. Because we're going to be doing those Patreon episodes, you can also still write in and email us at thebestbitspodcast.com/contact. You can pick a topic for us. Let us know what you'd like us to do. We've had a couple that came in that were kind of similar to what we're going to be doing next, but also kind of similar to what we've done before. So have a look at what we've already done and try and throw us a curveball. We'd love to hear from you.
And also, listen, you want more of us? Come and join us on Patreon. We have mini bits out all the time. There's over 70 mini bits episodes to date up there. And they are good crack.
There is.
And join us on our Discord, which is also constant crack.
You'll hear a snippet from the latest one at the very end of this pop-up.
Very
good. Introduce it.
Kevin.
Here you go.
That'll do.
That was
good crack.
Slong of all, Queen. And we'll see you on the other side. And I hope you all have a most wonderful St. Patrick's Day and drink sensibly. Only 2 bottles of whiskey for breakfast. That's what I recommend.
Okay. That'll do.
Goodbye.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin. All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a Patreon member, where you'll receive bonus shows where we talk about recent releases and what we're up to.
And you'll receive access to our Discord chat room where we hang out with our listeners.
Search The Best Bits podcast on Patreon or click on the link in the show notes.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Mini Bits.
Another new episode.
Talk to you, stupid puns.
Patreon podcast.
Of this Patreon podcast. Exclusive.
Exclusive.
The Best Bits podcast with Will and Ken. Bonus content for you. This is for you, not for them, just for you. The Best Bits podcast with Will and Ken. Exclusive content. You are the talking films and shows. The Best Bits podcast. This is for you.
Kevin, how are you?
Hi, honey. How are you?
Oh, you know, I've got this. I've got my corns sorted out. I went to the chiropractor the other day, and she
Your
said,
"Corn,
my corns. Did you ever get corns?
No.
Did you know what a corn is?
Yeah, it's a bunion on your foot, isn't it?
Yeah, like in between your toes and stuff like that.
Do you not wear any shoes like around the house? You walk
no,
barefoot.
No, it's the opposite.
GA shorts.
It's the opposite. I wear incredibly tight shoes, like those Chinese women.
Oh,
who get their feet bound, who had their feet bound, like, you know, before the turn of this last century. And so they had incredible corns and bunions. This is a great opener for a Mini Bits episode where we get people disgusted.
Squally, it's episode 73 of the Mini Bits. I'm Kevin, you're Will. This is our Patreon podcast. Thank you to all our lovely patrons. Yeah. A few of you have jumped in recently. I don't know what we said. We try to goad people into joining up every single episode, and then every so often it's like a lot of people join because of one specific episode, and I'm like, how did we say on that episode is different to the other 270 episodes.
Maybe it didn't sound as desperate. Maybe we said don't join. Maybe reverse psychology, that's how we should do it. Reverse psychology: don't join up to our Patreon. Don't
cancel. Cancel.
You don't deserve to be in this group. We don't want you. We don't like the look of
you. We don't need anybody.
It's just us. It's absolutely just us. Hey, should we tell people? We did, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't say it on mic, especially so early. We did an interview with the Irish Examiner last Friday.
We did.
Yeah.
And
how do you think I did?
I think you did all right. Like, you didn't interrupt me once, so I was delighted with how I came across. But, you know, there's no sort of time limit on this. We don't know when it's going to get posted. One of our friends was saying, Kathy at the cinema was saying that their interview with, did they do The Examiner as well? It was six months before it posted.
And The Guardian, I'm pretty sure. They were profiled in The Guardian as well.
Yeah, but we don't do any really promotion. Like, we don't do anything.
Well, this is our first time getting any sort of like proper coverage, which is going to be mad. So listen to all you listeners who have found us before we explode. You're an OG. You're an OG listener before Kevin starts getting gold chains from all his Patreon dash.
I think I'm more of a silver than a gold. I think my undertones suit more silver. But
I just want to die.
Goes with Prince Albert.
Your hat?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I want
one of those diamond studs in my tooth. That's all I want. So I can go bing whenever I'm on a call.
Oh, yeah.
Bing.
I usually just, you know, wink and like glint.
Yeah.
Like a starlight twinkle.
Speaking of which, I interrupted you. What did you want to speak of? Which?
Start the timer.
Oh, I forgot.
You may as well.
Start the timer.
All these lucky losers are listening in and they're wondering, what are we going to be talking about? But we have to start talking about them after.
Yeah.
We say goodbye. But look, I wanted to talk to you about, well, you've seen a few things. You've seen the new Godzilla film.
Yes.
I've seen the first Omen. I saw Scoop as well.
We're looking Netflix forward to watching thing. That. We already see, okay.
Okay, I'll save my thoughts. And what else did I see? I made notes, but sure, it doesn't really matter.
I think I saw it.
And I was going to go through all the summer releases and see what takes your fancy.
Okay. I'm looking forward because I don't actually know what's on the horizon. So
the Joker 2 trailer came out today.
I saw it. Yes, I watched that.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of Chicago.
Yeah, it's kind of like you see it's all very much in the mind's eye. They're calling it a jukebox musical. Am I right in saying that?
I think you're right in saying that.
So, look, hey, listen. What it did remind me of was that I want to rewatch The Joker because I saw it in the cinema and I thought it was fine. It was kind of a bold new direction.
I'm just going to go back and watch the episodes from the Batman 66 show. The Joker episodes.
Oh, yeah, that's going
to
be...
Just to fill me in, like, on the lore. You know, get up to speed.
Get you right up to speed. And you'll be there going, where are all the guys in the purple suits with the masks? When are they going to show up? And, like,
it's a weird time, though, where we have the Penguin TV show with Colin Farrell coming out, which is a totally different canon version of the Penguin. Then you have this offshoot of Joker, which isn't... its own universe entirely.
Mm.
And then you have the old Batman films that you can watch.
Right.
And, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's just, I don't know. I'm kind There's of so many IP.
But like,
it's just everywhere.
What's happened is the comic book world has very much entered the film world. It's where you could have different runs, totally different runs of a character by it's different insane. Authors. And there'd be totally different riffs on it and stuff. Oh, this is the thing. Kevin, so I'm only catching up on this. You mentioned it to me on a podcast. Was it on one of those show?
It was the last mini bits.
You said everyone's describing stuff as insane recently.
And have you started noticing it though?
Only with people trying to rise you. That's the only place where I've noticed people on Discord are trying to rise you.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I could start posting now, like tweets, comments, TikToks, articles, anything. Insane is everywhere. This is insane. That's insane. It's insane. There was a festival just going on about this insane lineup. I was like, oh, it's a mentally ill lineup. Okay. It's just, it's everywhere. And the other thing, do you know the other thing that's also bothering me lately?
Wow.
And this has been bothering me for years and years and years. It used to be that everyone used to misspell definitely. They'd go defiantly.
Okay.
Oh, it's defiantly whatever. They were just, they're morons. But no. I just keep noticing everyone keeps spelling a lot as one word, A-L-O-T, a lot. Where have they gotten into their heads that a lot is one word? It's the same way that people will write every time as one word.
What's the one that you've pulled me up on a few times and I can't get it right? Compliment. I can't get it right. It's like
because I told you the other day.
Yeah, and I went searching for it and I couldn't find it because I had to use it.
If there's an I in compliment, it's I'm paying you a compliment.
That's a good way to remember it. Okay, good. And then compliment.
I wrote that to you.
But you did, and I went to try and find it because I found myself writing the word compliments. And I went, shit, Kevin.
But you gave me a thumbs up, which meant in my world that, yeah, I read that. Thanks.
But I did, right? I'm talking about a couple of days later when I was faced with the exact same hurdle of writing the word compliment. I went, okay, what did Kevin say again about compliment? There's an I and the E. What did he say? So I went searching for it and I found it, I think. And I went, the I is paying me a compliment or I'm giving you
it's
a compliment.
It's insane how little you can retain information. It's insane.
Come here, let's start talking about what we watched. Come on.
Did you start the timer?
Yeah, it's gone. It's ticking. It's ticking down. The world's going to explode.
You know, I have to put in the sound effect. I have to line up all my sound effects.
When you said start the timer,
I have a whole soundboard here. Okay. Jesus Christ, where's my fucking...
What?
Where's my ding dang ding?
Here we go. The timer has started. There we go.
There we go. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Right.